I mean, how do I describe it? It's
bold.
A light.
Black.
Unapologetically black.
Very funny, amusing.
Caring.
You give great advice from a different perspective. Passionate.
Free.
Vulnerable.
A creative.
Sexy.
My girl is lit as fuck.
Always ready to work a little some.
Genuine, very genuine.
Resilient.
Like, sixth sense, otherworldly. If you know, you know.
It's so vibrant, baby. Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to Soul Vibrant, the place where music, history, and culture collide. I am your cultural storyteller and award-winning host, Lady AC. I just want to say, y'all are so amazing. I mean, my heart is so full based off the responses I'm still getting from last week's episode. I mean, from the comments to the likes and shares to people personally reaching out to me saying how they were inspired and influenced by my vulnerability of my story. It really makes me feel good to know I'm making that kind of impact and that people have learned and were able to engage with it so well. That I was able to give voice to a lot of experiences that people felt that they were alone in. Because the truth is, no, you weren't crazy. I'm sorry you were gaslit to make you think that you were, or your symptoms were downplayed or not paid attention to. I see you, because that was my experience too. So I'm glad that I was able to voice that and to bring awareness, so that way you and I can start really gaining our power back and really move forward in having that advocacy of demanding wellness. Because it's important to know, when we walk into these doctor's offices, in these hospitals, in these appointments, that we are just as an essential part of our healthcare as they are. That honestly, we should see it as a partnership, as a relationship, that we all must be on one accord about our symptoms, about our action plans, about our medications, about the follow-ups, and everything. And be able to hold each other accountable to make sure we have the best outcomes. Because too many people are dying off of things that are so preventable if people would just listen to one another, especially in the medical setting. So I feel one of the ways to combat that is to truly start to arm ourselves with our experiences, with information, and be willing to share them and communicate and connect with one another on those levels, so we can start to make change within ourselves and within this world, within this society. So just like every good doctor's visit, you have to have the follow-up, right? So today's episode serves as that follow-up of last week's episode, to dive a little bit more deeper in sharing more information and addressing some other things I didn't get quite to say in last week's episode, to better help you start your journey of advocacy. But we'll dive more into that, because of course, when it comes to me welcoming you into new information, I gotta do it the Soul Vibrant way, which is with some good music. So we're going to have our first musical break, and then I'll be right back.
You should know,
you should know,
that your soul
can be
wonderful.
Wonderful.
You should know,
you should know.
For my people, eh? Wanna get down.
fought for my rights. Build it up till they equal, eh? Couldn't be further than a sequel, eh? Tired of running for my life. Turn around, gun for the fight. Vampire burning in the light. Glow up, getting stunning from a people, eh? Got to rip the straw out your neck. Gotta make the wicked run a check. Love on who you physically reflect. Deep skin even in the winter, eh? Love on who you mentally affect. Wanna gain a skill due to reps, eh?
When our time is gone, you know the soul goes on
and on.
Part of you will be a living thing.
Part of you will be alive.
Always
special.
You should know.
You should know
that your soul.
That your soul.
Featuring Georgia Ann Moudreau and Joseph Lindbergh with You Should Know, a powerful affirmation of a song, because you should know the power, the advocacy in your voice, in your essence. And it's by design that you don't. But that design has to end, and it ends right now. A friend of mine said something so powerful to me, especially when we talk about in relations of how these oppressive systems tend to shape and control and mold our society, that we need to understand that we are the society and that we have the power to rewrite the rules. So it's time for us to rewrite, to reimagine, to create a new design of wellness and a better quality of life for all of us to have. Just to give a little bit of synopsis of last week's episode, because like I said, this is a follow-up of that. So the reason I stepped away from my podcast for a little bit was to have surgery, because I was officially diagnosed with having uterine fibroids and a large tail gut cyst located around the same areas of my body. And the reason these things were able to grow and become such issues is because for so long, my symptoms were consistently dismissed or misdiagnosed. They were dismissed due to the count of when doctors would see me in these offices, they automatically judge me and base my healthcare on the way my body physically looked. Being black, being woman, being fat, that was my diagnosis. So that's what needed more time to be taken care of, specifically my weight, became the talk of my appointments all my life. So if I had any other symptoms, everything was attributed to my weight. The other reason that I didn't quite get to talk about last week was the misdiagnosis. Because prior to me having it understood to be fibroids and the cysts, I was originally diagnosed with low iron anemia and sleep apnea, which both of these diagnoses are on two different ends of the spectrum. But it's interesting how the symptoms of those mirror and even mimic the symptoms commonly known for uterine fibroids and the cyst. So for instance, to explain, so sleep apnea basically is the brain doesn't receive enough oxygen while a person is sleeping. So essentially you're not breathing while you are resting. And as a result of that happening, it can cause severe fatigue. It can cause drowsiness, low alert levels, even bouts of narcolepsy where basically you fall asleep without even realizing it. However, that mimics symptom of low iron anemia, which is basically that our blood doesn't make enough iron to fulfill the needs of the body. So as a result of that, you also are fatigued, but you also more commonly are more willing to be cold. You have low vitamin D, which affects your hormones of, you know, you having energy for your bones to be strong, and you know, so that leads to like joint pains and body aches and cramping. And to be honest, before I get into the symptoms, that sometimes fibroids don't have symptoms at all, so that is a thing as well. But common symptoms of fibroids can look like constipation, which my cyst was, it was right on my tailbone next to my rectum or colon area, which completely disrupts the way I pass through different wastes of my body. Another symptom is frequent urination, or basically having to pee a lot. And ironically, frequent urination also can be a symptom of having issues with your kidneys. And I remember prior to all this that the doctor almost misdiagnosed me with having kidney issues, because they noticed the frequent urination was starting to show issues of like bouts of having protein in my urine, which shows that my kidneys weren't, what basically is a sign of my kidneys being overworked and not working enough to clear my body out. But the whole time it was once again these fibroids. The reason that they were looking at that as far as with my kidneys is because of my weight and because of my body, that I was pre-positioned to have issues with my kidneys because of the way I looked. But going back to the symptoms of the fibroids, another symptom is pelvic pain and pressure. Another symptom is back and leg pain. Of course, the heavy flow and painful periods. So as you see how these symptoms can overlap and can mirror and can honestly be similar in some cases. So without a doctor being proactive and starting to connect those dots, they easily were able to justify their reasonings of it being attributed to my weight, of being attributed to these other diagnoses and issues, and not looking any further into maybe it's something more, maybe it's something deeper. So That's why I urge you all to make sure when you start to see these symptoms that can mirror, that can mimic other different diagnoses, that you bring that, all that to the doctor's attention, that you go through and make sure to rule out and have the different tests to make it very clear and distinct of what you could have, what you can have, what you should know, and better equip yourself to be able to decipher the different ways in which your body needs to function for you to be well. Because unfortunately, in my case, with the doctors looking at different other diagnoses and not asking the different questions until I had this OBGYN do it, that these fibroids became more severe. And in these cases, while most people can actually live with fibroids and have normal lives with them, they can become dangerous when they are left unchecked and when they are allowed to just feed off the body and grow, such as the ones my did. And what and how that shows up in the body when they become dangerous is that it can cause severe anemia from heavy bleeding, because with me bleeding so heavily, that causes my heart to pump more blood. But if my blood does not have enough iron in it, it can overexert itself, which leads to have a strain on my heart or even cause heart failure. It also can cause issues with my kidneys, with my bladder, with my bowels, and even lead to organ failure in those cases. So once again, going back to how I said the doctor was thinking that I was having issues with my kidneys and automatically blaming it on my weight and my body type, but it easily could have been these fibroids leading the cause of the issue. Another or most commonly understood danger when it comes to fibroids is pregnancy complications or fertility complications. What I was unaware of is that it actually can also influence postpartum risk factors, such as postpartum hemorrhaging. By the way, I do want to make this point too, that even if you do have any of these symptoms that I'm listing, or you have the diagnosis such as PCOS, such as hypertension, or high blood sugar, blood pressure, diabetes, you still deserve quality care in the body that you have. Because last week I mentioned an article that exposed the ways that fatophobia, for instance, and anti-blackness shows up within the healthcare field. And one of the things I mentioned is how basically that the doctors would attribute so much to how that person looks, for instance, such as their weight, that sometimes they would suggest that you have to lose weight in order to get the quality care that you needed. And I can imagine some people hearing that, like, well, there are some, you know, surgeries or some procedures that they require you to lose weight. And yeah, there are. But that's not what I'm talking about. Because from the fat experience, there are people who they won't even treat you until you lose X amount of pounds. There have been experiences where I've had doctors literally walk into the room, never examine me, never listen or want to know what my symptoms are, but sit there and give me a whole rap sheet of what I need to do and where I need to go from there and how I need to, haven't even looked at my body or even looked at the problem that I came in for. All they saw was my skin color, my gender, and my weight. And the whole time, I'm there for an earache. It's like, you might as well walk into this office and say, well, this is what your fat ass get. Here's some medication. Here's this little diet that we're going to put you on so we can help you lose this weight and be on your way. Like, they might as well have done that. And that has been the experience for people in larger bodies, for people who don't look like the picture of health, which once again is all idolized by the straight white male, which is a marker that a lot of us will never measure up to. But regardless, you deserve to be safe in your body, to be healthy in your body. And just how you look does not determine that value of health. So that's why it is very important when you start to see these symptoms, when you start to feel the different changes in your body, to start to ask these questions, to start to really research and really have this dialogue with your doctor to go back and forth when it comes to the proper testing and the proper managing of those. So in my case, the two tests that I mainly did outside of blood work, I also had an ultrasound and an MRI done. And the MRI was very essential in exposing what was fully going on and reveal not only the fibroid but the tailgut cyst in its entirety. What makes the tailgut cyst a very rare cyst to develop is that it's typically developed genetically, because the tissue that the cysts have formed from mimic the tissue that I had along my tailbone, along my body. So any normal or other test wouldn't be able to pick it up because they would just saw it as my regular tissue. I can't remember when I was younger and I first experiencing the back pain, which was later attributed to the cyst, but I didn't know at the time. They thought I had broke my tailbone. And so the doctor ordered an x-ray. And because the tissue of the cyst mimicked the tissue around my tailbone, it just blended in. So they didn't see it. So that's why I talked about last week's episode, how I had to carry a pillow with me, because that's what the doctor recommended. If you still feel something, if you still think there's something wrong, ask for those tests, run those tests, ask for more labs to be done, and do within your means, of course, but definitely take those precautions. And in the case that these doctors feel and don't listen to you, another trick I learned later on is to have it notated in your chart. So for instance, if you want to have these tests and the doctor doesn't listen or the doctor doesn't suggest that, say, okay, well, put that in my chart that you said that you didn't want to take it. Put it in my chart that you chose to dismiss it. Because now what that does, it creates a paper trail. It creates documentation that something could have been done, but wasn't. You asked for something to be done and it wasn't. And it proves a history of them dismissing you. And then that looks bad on the physician. That looks bad on the practice. And the thing is, the practices, they don't want that. They may drag their feet, but they don't want that in the chart. They don't want that documented. But I want to pass that on. So as I stated in last week's show, originally the doctors wanted to focus on the cyst because it was still proving to be getting larger and proving to cause even more harmful issues for me compared to the fibroids, which in a way I had kind of learned the pain management of how to deal with them because I normalized it for myself. However, when it came to the removal, based on its placement, it runs smack dab into the largest fibroid that I had. So now it brings back into the question of getting rid of the fibroids now. So this leads me to the point I want to make to women who are going through the process of learning more about uterine fibroids, or you found out you have fibroids and you're trying to go about next plan of action in order to deal with them or handle them. The most important thing I want you to understand is that you have options. And try your best not to get intimidated by the options that are given. Because for instance, if you look online and just doing research on your own and trying to understand more about fibroids and how they grow or how to manage them, you'll be suggested a lot of different things. Because I can tell you from my experience when I was looking up information when I was going through it, and even to talk about on today's episode, there were so many different posts, so many different things telling you about how you can naturally shrink them and how you can eat certain foods to reduce them, how you can go about this method of dealing with them, go about that method, and it becomes so overwhelming that you either can confuse yourself, you can question what's genuine, what isn't, or honestly, you can welcome in some very bad advice that can honestly not help you at all. So it's very important to have kind of like the spirit of discernment and really cipher through all the information to know what works best for you and the lifestyle that you want. I did mention in last week's episode that Black women are disproportionately affected higher by fibroids. By at least 80%, we are more common to get them. And understanding the racist history that comes along with the myths of how the healthcare system already treats us, we are more prone to not knowing or not receiving the adequate options and care in order to address the issues such as fibroids. So for instance, we are more prone to be told to have hysterectomies than any other race of women. Ultimately, I chose to have a hysterectomy because of the way my cases worked out for me. That was the best option. So I remember when I was doing research to talk about today, and I was looking at the different options of what women could do when it came to the surgical route of fibroids. And I couldn't help but to notice how much of a negative connotation that hysterectomies had when it came into relation of fibroids and Black women and the surgical procedure of that, to the point where I got triggered a little bit. It was basically setting me up to feel like, did I make the right decision? Did I do right? Was I tricked into it? Like if you go down that rabbit hole, it'll make you feel so many different kind of ways. So I begin to wonder, where did this animosity, where did this negative connotations of hysterectomies come from in relation to fibroids and Black women? And me being a lover of Black history, I already knew that history. Because when you go to the earliest days, to the beginning of where gynecology was first being created, white men that were in control, who are credited with this sector of health, they did a lot of their research, experimentation, procedures on enslaved Black women. And that's where a lot of the racist, discriminatory practices of Black people not feeling pain or less privy to pain or can withstand, or the way our bodies are shaped to handle certain kind of ailments come from. Because believing that they would operate, they would cut open, they would prod, they would poke these enslaved Black women, and ultimately leading to the discoveries that we have and that we still use in our OBGYN offices and women's wellness clinics today. And so you have the trauma of that being passed down from generations to different generations. And one of the things that affects fibroids is stress and hormonal and genetics. And it has been proven, because I remember I did an episode on this earlier in previous seasons, that trauma, that stress can be passed down genetically to each of us and be stuck within us. That makes us more prone for different diseases such as autoimmune diseases. So if we're able to develop those things like that, it's not that far-fetched to think that all these other issues that we're more prone to gaining can also happen. But going back to the history, we also move into the forced sterilization and the forced hysterectomies that happened in the 1940s. Most famously, Fannie Lou Hamer, who is one of my favorite historical Black icons, part of her advocacy was speaking out against the forced sterilization and hysterectomies against Black women because she was a victim of that. She had fibroids and went to see the doctor to take care and remove the fibroid. That's what she was aware of. That's what she consented to. That's what her mindset was when she walked into that doctor's office, was that was the action plan. Only to find out that once she left, that they had removed her reproductive organs completely. And that's where she began to learn about the practices that these doctors were taking under the code of eugenics, which I talked about this last episode, but to give more context of it, that eugenics was a fake science to prove the inferiority of us as Black people, to prove that we deserve to be treated less than, that we weren't human. And in order to act that out, they would have different practices of controlling our population so that we couldn't make more of us, that they could eventually reduce how many of us actually existed. And one of those ways was by sterilizing Black women to stop them from having more Black children and bringing more Black babies into the world, especially within the South, and particularly the states of Mississippi and North Carolina. But this happened all over the country. I do want to make that clear. It was more popular, unfortunately, in the South and in the states that I mentioned, to the point where it was nicknamed the Mississippi appendectomy. And this practice continued from the 1940s early into the 1980s. And between that time, young Black girls all the way to full-grown Black women were victims of forced sterilization or the Mississippi appendectomy. One case that caught national attention in 1973 was of Minnie Lee and Mary Ellis Ralph. And these two girls, under the guise of believing they were receiving more shots for their health, were actually given unauthorized birth control, causing them both to be sterilized. And how the doctors and nurses got away with that is they were able to convince the parents to sign over their consent to do that, but they knew that the parents could not read, nor could they write. So once again, you're seeing how this disparity and the racism and the anti-Blackness and this unworthiness of seeing people who are poor, who are Black, who are women, and taking advantage of that to use and manipulate the system to do what they need to do, what they choose to do with their bodies. So with having this understanding of this history, I get why there would be this pushback when it comes to hysterectomies and Black women and fibroids. While what happened between the 1940s and 80s did lead to consent laws, legislation being done to prevent these things from happening, but regardless of the laws, the attitudes, the mindsets, the feelings, they still stayed. So why they can't legally force women to have hysterectomies or operate on their own, what they can do is make that or center that as the only option. So no wonder you see Black women have this reaction to hysterectomy being the only option or the sole option or typically the first option that doctors give. And the doctor offered me two choices of either having the myectomy or the hysterectomy. That I thought about all of this. I really had to mull over and knew what was the best option for me. And that's when it clicked that I chose to have a hysterectomy. It was so powerful for me to reclaim my body in that way. Because not only we're reckoning with this history of how the medical field has treated Black women in the name of science and health, but also within my own ancestry, there are so many Black women in my lineage whose bodies have been abused, have been taken advantage of, who have had things done to them without their consent. That for someone down that line, a descendant like me, to now have the choice to choose what to do with my body caused a shift. And I felt it. I still feel it. It felt like that I was correcting so many wrongs that was done and end up healing people because now someone down that line had the right to choose. So for that reason, I say this to women is that having a hysterectomy isn't a bad choice. If you choose to do that and that is what's best for your health, do it. But as I said before, all of this, when it comes to handling or dealing with your fibroids, understand you have options. Because even with a hysterectomy, you have options within that. There are different types of hysterectomies. So for instance, in my case, I had what is called a total hysterectomy. But it gets more specific than that because the actual procedure I had is called a, and please forgive me, y'all, because while I am aware of medical terminology, I am not a doctor. So I will do my best to pronounce the name of the surgery that I had, but if to my knowledge, the actual term for the surgery I had is total hysterectomy laparoscopy. And basically that is where they take the uterus, the cervix, and my fallopian tubes, but the doctor made a point to preserve my ovaries. So of everything, I still have my ovaries for two reasons that can apply to anybody listening to me. Me having my ovaries prevents me from going into menopause early, where in a world where premenopause is a thing and it's starting to affect younger generations of women. Like I am aware there are some women of in my age range and younger that are starting to experience symptoms of that. So it helps kind of fight against that. But also, in my case, I don't want to have children. But for any woman listening to me and who finds themselves having a hysterectomy, and if you preserve your ovaries, while you may not be able to carry or physically carry a child, you can still have one because you still have your eggs. You'll just have to most likely go the route of surrogacy or the procedure where they take the egg and the sperm, they fertilize it and they place it somewhere else to, for it to grow. But you can still do that. But I wonder when people talk about hysterectomies, do they know about these options of these surgeries? Or do they automatically just see parts of them just being taken away? So just understand there are different levels to these hysterectomies, but then there are different surgeries you can have. For instance, the myectomy, where they just remove the fibroids on its own. There are surgeries where they cut off the blood supply to the individual fibroids and let them die off on their own. There are other procedures where they use radiation to take away the fibroids. So there are so many options available to you because you are the one that has to live this life. sorry, not sorry. But in this case, I'm gonna have to be selfish and be about me and what's good for what I can live with.
Manipulation don't work the same like it used to. She got boundaries, I can't get around, I'm not too pop. She prioritizing herself, she talking more to God. She holding me accountable, she say I'm not her job. She say in order to be whole, I gotta play my part. Why can't she piece me all together, ain't she good at art? I don't like her clarity, her freedom disturbing my flaws. Yo, disconnection, my redirection, I self-corrected. Spent too much time accepting less than my weight in metal. Looking at my feet and I'm missing petals. Where my roses, y'all been posing. You don't love me the way that you say, I know it. Pulling at my strings, everybody got motives. What you need, you want from me, without reciprocity. I'm the only one that I owe an apology for putting up with sorry motherfuckers disturbing my peace. You bitch.
I'm not your fixer.
I'm not your fixer.
I'm not gonna spend my Saturday apologize.
And that was Moonchild featuring Rhapsody and Jill Scott with Not Sorry. Because, baby, let me tell you, I ain't sorry about any of the decisions I had to make sure I am in control of my own happiness. Because there's a line in that song that really just hit my soul when it says, I am not responsible for your happiness. I can only control my own. And Ooh. When I tell you that was a word, that was a message for me. Because one of the most taxing and emotional parts of going through everything is there you're going to encounter a lot of people who will project what they have normalized in their lives onto you. So they'll make the suggestions. They'll tell you what you need to do, how you should move, how you should go. You should follow, in the case of the healthcare system, what is the best option for you. This your only option. This your only way. This the only thing. It's important to remember you are the one who has to live this life. You are the one with this body who has to work in it. You have to sleep in it. You have to engage the world with it. You have to live in it. So ultimately, you have to make the decisions that you can rest at night with, that you can be happy with, that bring you joy, that bring you love, that brings the best outcomes for you. You have to make that decision at the end of the day. So it is imperative that you choose to control your own power, your own happiness first. And that's what I'll say on that. I genuinely hope that all this information is helpful, that it gives more layers and more context for you to make, once again, the best possible decisions for your wellness and for your health. Do not be afraid to ask for more, to ask for more clarity, to ask more questions, to be well researched, to make sure that you have access to that. Now, I know with this pending loom that we have going on with this healthcare and all this stuff, use this energy to be more proactive and taking care of ours, taking care of each other. Definitely, I do encourage, not just to promote the show, but to share this episode so that people have awareness of this history, have awareness of these options. Just like I did on last episode, I will post links and recommendations for more history, more information that you can use and follow and be able to share and access. Because, honey, we have to be for us, because we all we got. And we gonna make the most of it, because what we're doing, we rewriting, redesigning our reality. So on that note, y'all, I am on all social medias. Facebook.com is QueenLadyAC. On Instagram and Threads is _IAmLadyAC. On Substack is LadyAC. And on Twitter and X, it is IAmLadyAC. So until next week, y'all, research, share your knowledge, love on each other, take care of each other, and I'll see you next week.